Well, all right. I've been doing a whole lot of recording lately for this podcast, so this episode I'm going to be calling Equality in the Crosshairs, Debunking Right-Wing Myths and Defending Liberal Ideals. So when I say something like, I stand with those who favor equality, I'm referring to people who want practically full equality for themselves and their fellow citizens, and not merely that they equalize opportunity, but whatever maximizes equality of outcome and simply improves life for people overall. It's a tough concept for some people to grasp, to the point where some fear it, they condemn it, think it's hopelessly naive, inherently irrational, etc. I say it is not an inherently bad or stupid idea. The premise is simply that, to the extent possible, people should basically be regarded as equals and try to have a society that reflects that. It is perhaps an idealistic concept, and they say the road to hell is paved with good intentions, but I don't think good intentions are always hellish, and I think the fear of equality is prominent more because inequality tends to benefit certain groups that don't wish to lose their power and privilege. Want evidence that equality makes sense, at least to the common mind? Maybe look no further than the United States Declaration of Independence itself, which famously states that all men are created equal. I'm sure you've heard that before. And I guess one of the questions is that, you know, just something that people say, or does it actually have meaning beyond an assemblage of words? Granted, that all men are created equal thing only says men, but I think the point still remains, and is understood by most modern people to include women. The problem is some people out there on the right are increasingly hostile to the very concept of equality, which is one reason why I'm doubling down on my liberal/leftist cred. I simply wish to distance myself from the anti-social equality trends so prominent among the right-wing narratives these days. In the process of propping up their anti-equality movements, the far right has seen fit to characterize themselves paradoxically as pro-freedom and the left as strictly anti-free speech. I mean, how many times have we heard that tired refrain? That is in many ways fundamentally dishonest, as we have seen endless ways in which the far right hates free speech, whether it's attempting to ban books across the country, attacking teachers and protesters' free speech, trying to restrict access to voting, railing against depictions of LGBT characters and themes in TV and films and books, and so on and so forth. Leftist movements also exist, which support various interests such as free speech and religious freedom, but these do not feature so prominently in most American corporate mainstream media coverage, which spends far more time trying to increase fears of the others out there, you know, whether it's immigrants, you know, the good old standby of black people, especially black men, and other minorities, you know, spooky people who tend to be non-rich and non-white in a lot of cases. Unless they're going after the liberal elites, in which case they actually will criticize people who actually have a good amount of money. But that's a different story. I'll get around to that later. But you know, at the same time, as they're skewing this narrative about free speech, they want to deny these other groups and the non-rich in general access to various safety nets that could help them out greatly, if not be the main source of survival in a crisis situation. You know, a lot of people end up in a situation where they pretty much need help. They need assistance from somewhere. And some people in the far right, and let's face it, some conservative-leaning Democrats want to yank those resources away in the name of being responsible. So that is, of course, defended ideologically by the far right along the lines of preventing government overreach and hating the redistribution of wealth. But, you know, never mind the fact that capitalism is constantly redistributing wealth upward to the already rich and using the power of law to do so. We're not supposed to acknowledge that. And the far right takes advantage of disagreement on such issues to the extent that they can. When it comes to discussions about taxation and state ownership, particularly in matters of redistribution, there will likely be a notable divergence of opinions between liberals and other groups. And liberals can mean a lot of different things, but we're just using it generically here. But anyway, that disagreement is because taxation laws have a near universal impact, affecting individuals across various countries and historical periods, while being strongly influenced by national culture and history. You know, that the fact that we have a global economy is a relatively new thing, so we're sort of being bogged down by the phenomenon of nationalism and traditionalism, because some people don't want the idea of being held accountable or holding power accountable across different cultures and internationally. You know, that's one of the quirks about the world we live in. You know, we're supposedly in an information age, and it's easier to have access to different ideas and different peoples than ever before. Yet some people, they're trying to take away those advantages that the vast majority of people can now have. You know, well, that's really a way to boldly approach the future, isn't it? Just basically keep us frozen in time or turn back the clock. And, but if you don't agree that, you know, we're constantly having a debate about this because taxation is such an important issue, well, think about infrastructure, you know, roads, bridges, airports, things of that nature. There will always be some disagreements about how these things should be done, such as who should bear the biggest tax burden, or if we're including anarchists in this debate, if there should be a tax burden at all. The far right, in service of the billionaire class, which doesn't want to pay taxes, wants to shift that burden overwhelmingly onto the poor and the working class. And that's right, I'm saying that. They are, by and large, not actually tax abolitionists, though they try to look like they're rebels and radical and all that stuff. In reality, they often support something like a national sales tax, which most certainly shifts that tax burden away from the rich and further on to everyone else. And, you know, it gives people a false sense of fairness, you know? Then there are the neoliberals or conservative corporate Democrats in America. There's really no shortage of right-wing talk amongst self-purported or self-professed liberals. In fact, I do have to say, the very premise that we absolutely need systems of authority is actually a right-leaning premise, at least comparatively speaking. It's not very different in spirit than the premise of divine right of kings, or the associated idea that rebellion is a sign that the rulers have lost the mandate of heaven, as the Chinese worded it back in the good old days. So on that note, most liberals are not far left, as they value the status quo and merely believe that these systems should have a safety net, perhaps adequate enough to function as insurance against revolution. But still, the rigid adherence to the premise of necessary authority and the fear of absolute overarching chaos in the absence of authority often makes conformists think and behave more extreme than necessary, and it makes them susceptible to, you know, falling for right-wing talking points, which they may feel will help preserve the system and prevent chaos and that sort of thing. That's why a shift rightward is so relatively easy. You know, it's way to cater to the concept of order, because that's one of the primary right-wing talking points is, you know, you've got to keep people in line, you got to keep them in check at all times, and sure enough, that seems fair enough, but it just so happens that in order to do that, they want you to preserve some illegitimate power structures, perhaps. Whoopsies, you know. That's, you know, like slipping on the banana peel. But, you know, it's necessary in order for the tragicomedy of politics to continue. You have to keep on slipping on that same old banana peel, moving further to the right, and then occasionally there will be some sort of shake-up in the system that appears to, you know, make it more moderate, but then the pendulum of history will swing back in that rightward direction again. And, you know, the rigid adherence to the system is one of the dominant ideologies. You can insert system here, but the most simple premise is that we need something, you know, like that to, otherwise, you know, we'll all just collapse into sheer chaos. However, I suggest that given both sides' respective strengths and weaknesses, you know, the moderate right and the moderate left, you might say, any agreement or compromise between right and left must meet two criteria first and foremost in order to be meaningful, at least in my opinion. It should produce equitable results and reduce inequality across society overall to the extent possible. And second, sufficient advantages must flow more downward to the general populations and forward to larger amounts of people in the future, rather than upward to the ultra-rich and backwards to traditional rulers, usurpers, and assorted tyrants from the past. This pattern should be built into future generations to the extent possible. Again, that's if the any sort of compromise is to be meaningful and long-lasting and deserving of being preserved. Also, at the core of any honest, factual, thoroughly modern, science-minded assessment of politics, it must be admitted that these things we call countries are abstract, flawed, and malleable. You know, the whole premise that, you know, they're fixed, like they're, you can't change them, they're permanent, whatever type of word you want to use, it's a phony baloney premise, okay? Like, that is a cultural phenomenon, first and foremost. As we've seen in recent years, you can believe in the law as much as you want, but if the vast majority of people in the country no longer believe in laws or even rules of thumb, you know, chaos can definitely ensue. So, going back to one of the basic discussions here, what causes a societal power imbalance in the first place? Well, I'm going to be specific in referring to our situation. It's the fact that wealthy and powerful people tend to control and dominate politics and business. That is law, property, resources, decision-making power, etc., through money and influence, at odds with relatively more liberal or leftist values. In fact, the website Who Rules America refers to it as the triumph of the corporate rich. So, you know, it's though such situations can be shockingly spontaneous, you know, you can have people accrue wealth and power and privilege in a relatively short period of time. These disparities are more often largely because of historical reasons and circumstances that are, you know, almost more easy to trace, frankly, and they may be viewed positively by conformists who justify these institutions by regarding them as necessary, historically relevant, and scientific in a way. The disparities exist, but perhaps they are merely reasons to call for increased educational opportunities for poor children, or improved access to affordable housing for low-income families, or improved care facilities for aged and disabled people. And provided these improvements could benefit future generations, promises of improvement can lure people into lightweight activism without necessarily questioning the structure that likely causes disparities in the first place. So that is not to say moderate reforms never help, but that they're typically not enough, especially in light of far-right, legally backed, culturally promoted, powerful interests that function as class warfare against the rich, of the rich against the poor. That's what I was meaning to say there. But meanwhile, even moderate reforms can become harder to come by as the social fabric frays more and more if a far-right cultural narrative dominates, and it sure can dominate in certain circles. While certain inequalities can cause harm and disadvantage to individuals and societies, such as unequal treatment by law enforcement agencies and employers, unfair dismissal, poverty, racism, sexism, the far-right narrative has transformed any such concerns into absolutely nothing but something to scorn and ridicule, scoff at. Increasingly, to even acknowledge that things like racism and sexism exist is simply to be a loony leftist, and they'll call you divisive, as if noting inequality is necessarily a bad and divisive thing, or whatever term right-wingers wish to use or line of argument. Ultimately, as the endless smears against liberals and leftists snowball, the far-right media machine ends up bashing anybody who criticizes what, by now, amount to white nationalist talking points. Also, increasingly, it doesn't matter what sort of position you have in life, as long as you have a viewpoint that is even marginally liberal or leftist, they'll hate you for it. They'll hate you if you're a well-off Hollywood celebrity. They'll hate you if you're a college-educated person, and dismiss you as some privileged liberal brat, who has no real life experience. I don't know how many times I've heard that one over the years. Or if you are a loser, if you're a loser fast food worker or a gig worker or just someone low on the economic totem pole, or you work some non-college job, will be another way they'll dismiss you. If you have anything bad to say about capitalism, the military, and foreign policy, increasingly dominant theocratic fascist movements, etc., you will basically be characterized as a villain. In fact, just try telling people that the American flag is only a piece of fabric and a form of rational symbolism worship. See what happens. See how people react if you, start telling simple truths like that. You're just not allowed to be anything other than what the far right wants you to be in America, well, if they have their way. And that means you must be living in service to a rich, white, Christian, heterosexual, male-dominant ideology. It's not just if you're LGBTQ+, that you have something to fear, or black, or an immigrant, but if you want legal access to abortion. Then again, it extends beyond that, too. If you believe in sex for purposes other than procreation, you want access to birth control, and that sort of thing, then that is also just liberal shenanigans. You're evil. And there's a lot of conservative talk about how evil those types of people are. And they want to make it harder for women to get divorced, too. And it's increasingly common on the far right to suggest that women should not be allowed to vote, or at least that there should just be one vote per household, which is sort of a kinder way of saying, the dad figure is going to be the main person who votes. However, left-wing ideologists usually regard inequality as unfair and illegitimate, So they will always be seeking out things to criticize, which means the far right forever has to play whack-a-mole against them, until they get to a point where they can just stop such sentiments altogether, as in a strict, fear-based dictatorship that will kill dissenters. Ooh. I think that's something they're increasingly openly advocating for. Go ahead and take a look and see. And that really is where this is heading if we're not careful. So many argue that inequality leads ultimately to exploitation and oppression of workers, and thus is morally wrong. However, it's hard to have moral debates when there's a gun pressed to your head and you're living in like a neo-fascist theocracy. In fact, what is there to even debate? You either listen or you pay a significant price.